Okay. Hello and welcome. I'm Paul Stevenson. This is my debut show here on revisionmedia.org. I've just finished my other show, which is also a lot of R's in this. Yes, revisionmedia.org here. I'll be with you through till 11 p.m. That's through till 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Just following on from my previous show on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 9 till 10. And again, this is my debut show. I'm Paul Stevenson, your host here. And it's great to be with you. We're going worldwide. It's the beauty of internet radio. Wherever you are around the world, welcome to the show. Let me just give out the details if anybody wants to call in. If you're in the UK, you can just phone in on 0203-514-1993. That's 0203-514-1993. If you basically enter the international exit code prefix, then wait for the prompt and enter your call-in number and then press hash, if I'm correct. And you can call in with any questions or comments or insights or views. We'd be really glad to hear from you. So what are we going to be talking about? Well, lots of different things. I mean, my position is basically I am a nationalist. I am a Christian. I am someone who believes in common sense, someone who sees that the West is being destroyed. And I think the biggest topic of our day and the biggest issue of our day, particularly for the European man, is immigration. And I was breaking down in my last show just the extent of the hypocrisy and double standard that the leftist establishment display when it comes to the issue of immigration, because Europe is the only place that has to embrace and indeed celebrate this diversity. Diversity is our strength, of course, they tell us, and this multiculturalism. Whereas everyone else around the world, perfectly normal for them to preserve their ethnic and religious and cultural identity and heritage. Of course, this is the elephant in the room, and I think it needs to be discussed, and we need to start talking to these people. How is it in Africa that they're allowed to have a hugely black dominant population? In China, Chinese people. In Japan, Japanese people. In Israel, of course, you have to do DNA tests to prove you're Jewish. But in Europe, Europe's up for grabs. Europe belongs to whoever has the most will to own it, it would seem. And what we have is a situation here where we have largely Jewish and Zionist lobby groups lobbying our politicians to the point that we've almost got a fifth column in our political establishment right across the West, pushing for open borders and mass immigration, uncontrolled immigration into the West, with few exceptions. And it is irrevocably altering the demographic and cultural anatomy, the ethnic and cultural anatomy of the West. The West, as we knew it, is under serious threat, to put it mildly. This would not be tolerated. In fact, I'm going to play this hypocrisy and this double standard is really eloquently encapsulated here in a video by Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. And really is worth playing. I think it's only about 10 minutes less. So, but it really hits the nail on the head, this double standard, this elephant in the room, where, you know, everybody else around the world are not only allowed to get a pass with their own dominant racial group being the dominant racial group in their own countries, and obviously culturally as well, but any threat to that they are allowed to protect themselves in a way that the white European Christian is not allowed to, because he's a Nazi who's just about to kill another 6 million Jews, apparently, or worse, kill millions of other ethnic groups who come here because we hate them. I mean, they all risk their lives to get here. There's enough of them here. They're everywhere. But they all come from India and from the Muslim countries and from sub-Saharan Africa, of course, and from the ex-communist countries. They come from everywhere because we're so racist and hateful here. And that's why they come. Again, another counterintuitive argument for the great racist, evil white man. If we were more racist, like a lot of these countries are actually racist, we might not find ourselves in this position. We might actually survive. We might not be in the brink of collapse. Because I would say the white man, even without being brainwashed, is the most tolerable of the races. To his detriment in many ways. So when it comes to immigration and racism and everything else, up's down and down's up. And if you dare even attempt to look in the direction of protecting your ethnic and cultural and religious identity in the West, then you better be prepared to feel the full weight of the establishment coming down on you. And if you've got a public voice, you better be prepared to maybe have to stand in court and protect and defend your position, you evil racist, potentially the next Adolf Hitler, who they tell us killed 6 million Jews. So here's Jared Taylor exposing this double standard very eloquently.
Hello, I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. Everyone has heard that there has been so much non-white immigration to the United States that by 2040 or so, whites will be a minority. A French demographer says whites will be a minority in France by 2060. Whites are being replaced. But you better not complain. Just type the words "the great replacement" into a search engine and you'll find out just how hateful you are. Minority. If you use the words "the great replacement" in the title of a YouTube video, as we did, YouTube will unilaterally tack on a link to explain to you that it's a white nationalist right-wing conspiracy theory. But in just the last few days, there may have been a media change of heart about replacement. It has to do with Jammu and Kashmir, the only Muslim-majority state in Hindu India. When India became independent in 1947, Article 35A of the Constitution said outsiders could not permanently settle in Kashmir or buy land there. That was to protect Kashmir's unique identity. Well, India is now being run by Hindu nationalists, and on August 5th, they revoked Article 35A, which means Hindus can move in and buy land. Well, isn't this wonderful? Those benighted Muslims will now learn the joys of diversity. And surely, not letting Hindus buy property in part of their own country was like redlining and segregation. Well, astonishingly, the media don't see it that way. The Associated Press warned that, for many, India's decision is a breach of trust and an attack on Kashmir's identity. A Vox article said that the decision on Kashmir has sparked fears of ethnic cleansing, that Hindus will flock to the region and push out the Muslims once and for all. Ethnic cleansing? Isn't that a hate-filled conspiracy theory? Even the New York Times worries about Kashmir's identity. Human rights activists said that the moves to change Kashmir's status were only the first steps in a broader plan to erode Kashmir's core rights and seed the area with non-Kashmiris, altering the demographics and eventually destroying its character. The human rights group American Renaissance has been warning for decades that immigration is changing the character of the United States. The Washington Post sounds just like American Renaissance. It reported that analysts say the change could bring about a profound transformation of Kashmir's population that would exacerbate unrest there. Farooq Abdullah represents Jammu and Kashmir in the Indian Parliament. He says his party will not allow any changes in the demography of the state, and any attempt to dilute Jammu and Kashmir's unique identity will be resisted. Can you imagine an American politician talking like that? Well, actually they do, but not about the United States. Ever since Israel was established in 1947, every president has recognized its right to remain Jewish. President Bill Clinton tried to make peace in the Middle East, but as he wrote on page 633 of his autobiography, no Israeli leader would ever let in so many Palestinians that the Jewish character of the state could be threatened. Israelis refused to be replaced. What about the U.S.? In 2009, Mr. Clinton told a group of American Arabs that by 2050, the U.S. will no longer have a majority of people with European heritage. And in an interdependent world, that is a very positive thing. Well, why is replacement good for us, but bad for Israel? In 2015, Barack Obama told The Atlantic magazine that there's a direct line between supporting the right of the Jewish people to have a homeland and to feel safe and free of discrimination and persecution, and the right of African Americans to vote and have equal protection under the law. These things are indivisible in my mind. Mr. Obama sees no difference between rights for blacks and the Jewish right to a homeland. But why, if whites want homelands, are they haters? Donald Trump wants Israel to stay Jewish too. He was delighted when a Jewish settlement in what used to be the Syrian Golan Heights was named Trump Heights. Just last year, the Knesset declared Israel to be the nation state of the Jewish people, and that the fulfillment of the right of national self-determination in the state of Israel is unique to the Jewish people. Our rulers don't find this xenophobic or hateful at all. At this very moment, the largest ever congressional delegation is visiting Israel to show bipartisan support. That's 41 Democrats and 31 Republicans, nearly 15% of the entire Congress. If France declared itself the exclusive homeland of the French, there would be bipartisan support for sanctions. Well, we support other ethnostates. The Dalai Lama warns that so many Chinese are swarming into Tibet that his country is, in his words, fast becoming a Chinese colony. He adds, this will further reduce the Tibetans into an insignificant minority in their own country. He wants to protect our unique culture and identity. Well, mysteriously, every U.S. president, from Bush the Elder to Barack Obama, has invited this vicious xenophobe more than once to the White House and showered him with praise. And then there's Xinjiang province in China. It's ethnically and religiously different from the rest of the country, and the Uyghur people who live there like it that way. Well, the Chinese government, the Han people, wanted to be Chinese and encourage mass migration. The leftist British paper, The Guardian, which loves mass migration to the West, sympathizes with the Uyghurs. It denounces unmistakable colonial practices, such as the transfer of Han Chinese to the region. The Nation magazine is furious about increasing Han migration, which exacerbates the local population's sense of being overwhelmed by the Chinese. The U.S. Council on Foreign Relations reports that riots broke out as mostly Uyghur demonstrators protested against state-incentivized Han Chinese migration in the region and widespread economic and cultural discrimination. In the eyes of Beijing, all Uyghurs could potentially be terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. Isn't that what the left calls whites who don't want to be replaced? Potential terrorists? I detect a pattern. It's okay for non-white people to resist replacement. No one says the Japanese or the Moroccans or the Bolivians are Nazis because they don't want diversity. And it's very okay for Israelis not to want to be replaced. But Europeans? Every one of our countries, from New Zealand to Canada, is supposed to be up for grabs. As Esquire recently explained, if you don't want to be replaced, you're a white nationalist. And a white nationalist adheres to a violent ideology, whether or not that person has yet to potential terrorists, just like the Uyghurs. But the reaction to what happened in Kashmir is a ray of hope. We'll see if liberals begin to stumble towards the realization that what's good for Israelis and for all non-whites should be good for white people too. Thanks for watching. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And come visit our website at amren.com. That's AMREN.com. Also, take a look at our podcast YouTube channel. That's Amren Podcasts.
Just about hits the nail on the head, doesn't it? Immigration, mass immigration, is the unique privilege of the white European countries. It doesn't occur anywhere else, and if there's even if it looks like it's occurring anywhere else, examples he gave there, then those countries and those peoples are perfectly within their rights to try and protect themselves. And the great irony and hypocrisy and double standard, of course, is our leftist media, as he pointed out, who are so pro-immigration into the West, they suddenly take the sides of these people who intuitively want to protect their ethnic and cultural identity. When we do it, we're Nazis. And we're evil. Because we are dealing with cultural Marxism, where the white race, the Christian faith, and the patriarchy and anything that we have held dear here in this country is under attack. And this is a religious system, and I've pointed that out before, and anybody who disagrees with it, they receive the treatment, the heretic treatment, the witch in the village treatment. You may not get burned at the stake, but you'll lose a job, or you'll be hounded by the media and shamed and intimidated. You lose a job, you could end up in prison, and you could end up dead as well if you're too much of a threat to it. And I spoke earlier on Revolution Radio that, you know, we don't really have a nationalist movement in this country. We have an anti-Islam movement, which is basically designed to prevent a genuine nationalist movement in this country. And there's a lot of misled people in there. There's a lot of useful idiots in there. Tommy's might be either a useful idiot or he's a bit more sinister than that himself. And there's a lot of people who are there who just don't give a damn about the country and who are only part of that movement for their own selfish reasons. And they don't ever talk about the Jewish role in immigration. When you have there's an article here, I'm trying to think Luke Ford. Every major American Jewish organization, including the Orthodox Union and Agudath Israel, supports immigration amnesty. Every one of them. Now, you would think if you really are a nationalist and you care about your country, that will be worth a mention, that will be relevant. Apparently not. Certainly not in this country anyway, because it's the same right across Europe. It's not just in America. Every major, Israel literally receives immigrants off the coast of, whether it be Spain or Italy particularly, or Greece, and they welcome them, they give them food, they tell them where to go, what to say, how to play the race card, and how to get benefits and how to manipulate the system. And this is the our great allies over there in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, who have a lockdown on immigration into their own country. This article says, over the past year, and this is only this is at the end of 2017. No, this is an article, April 18, just over a year. Israel has cracked down on illegal African immigrants. They're called infiltrators in Israel. And they're getting caught and imprisoned and then repatriated to Africa. Could you imagine if we anybody in this country did that? As Taylor said, there'll be sanctions on you. Your political career will be over.
I did a search of the Orthodox Union and the Good of Israel, and I could find no condemnation of Israel for this. So they're allowed to call them what they, you know, what they are largely is, you know, infiltrators. But not here. They're victims here, and apparently everybody who comes from lesser cultures in their own country, which they, the people produced, not the land didn't produce their inferior culture, but apparently that's the responsibility of everybody in this country or in Europe. Here we go. We've got a caller here. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir. You're on the air. You're live with me, Paul Stevenson, here on revisionmedia.org. How are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Sorry. What's your name?
My name's Greg. I was chatting with you on Facebook a little while ago.
Go ahead, Greg. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, I was the one that was talking about my experiences with the whole Freemasonry thing. So we're on the radio live right now over there where you're at?
Yeah, you're live. You're live because obviously we're going out right across the U.S. and right across, well, everywhere because it's internet radio. So it's 10:30 p.m. here in the U.K., just outside London where I am.
I thought you didn't start till 11.
No, 10 till 11. I start from 10 p.m. till 11 p.m. U.K. time.
All right. Did you read what I wrote you on Facebook?
I haven't read it yet. You know what? I'm not on Facebook as much as I used to, I must confess.
All right. Well, I knew this last January, my nickname was Nine Lives by the Freemasonry group. Since you haven't read what I wrote you, apparently, I'm just going to try to give you what I can as briefly as possible.
Yeah, and you forgive me for not reading it because I get sent so much stuff by email and stuff on Facebook. I do try and read it, but I haven't gotten to your message yet.
Yeah, well, I seen a post of yours or some kind of communication with that Dan Badandi fellow, and I friended you because I noticed some Masonic words or phrases, and I really haven't been able to talk to too many people about this stuff because of the nature of it all. So it just sounded kind of interesting that you are open enough to talk about it, and that you mentioned in one of your responses to me that you are quite well versed in the matter relative to their being. And I wrote back at you that everybody I've talked with so far, they really don't have much of a real clue on these things.
When did you send me the message? Just to see if I can pull it up to get a little bit of background on it.
It was probably 5:15.
Today?
Yeah. I friended you today. Let me just try to give you a little bit to try to, based upon what we just talked about right now, you acknowledging that you haven't read it yet. Let me just give you what I can while we're being allowed to converse. How's that sound?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so it started with me back in 1996 with these people. I bought a farm that had $250 million worth of gravel. I was a materials engineer working for a materials supply corporation. Before I closed on the property, I bought a farm that had 25 million ton of gravel, approximately. It was in the form of a glacial mineral deposit that was worth approximately at that time about $250 million worth of an asset sitting in the ground from a mineral deposit perspective. Within a few weeks, way before I even closed on the property, it was 136 acres farm in Allegheny County, New York State. Before I even closed on the property, I had some of my coworkers tell me they were Freemasons, and I had never heard of it before. I think it was August 12th, 1996, within about a couple months of when I had originally signed the purchase offer, so it was mutually accepted. So it was a legal activity that I had gone down the path of acquiring. You still there?
Yeah, I'm listening. Go ahead.
All right. So by August 12th, 1996, that's when I actually went through what's called the first rite ritual ceremony. I was told I could have anything I wanted, pretty much. I could do anything I wanted, pretty much, and life could be easy. And that, in essence, lured me to at least go check it out. I was told it was a business meeting, that I could check out what they were all about and make a decision as to whether or not I wanted to proceed and engage with them. And I never did anything with it. The guy came into my office the next morning and asked me what I thought about the matter. And I just indicated that I was too busy at the time to interact with them. I didn't believe it. I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't have a clue back then. That was 1996. I had never heard of Freemasonry up until that point in time in my life. I was 32 years old. So basically, I've been what's called riding the goat ever since, is at least the way it's presented to all the junior members of the group. And I did refer to them in my writings to you, basically as a terrorist group, on the premise that when they do involve themselves with people, they engage in threatening bodily harm and death if you talk about these things, such that if you understand the definition of the criminal activity called extortion, that's a felony. That's threatening things to try to coerce someone into acting or thinking a certain way. That's what they do in their rituals. They call them degrees. Some people call them blood oaths. So that's defined as a terrorist act, and so therefore they are a terrorist group, at least based upon any dictionaries I've studied. Now, I've been riding this mystical Freemason goat for 23 years, and I didn't start figuring any of this out till about 2011. Just as soon as I started figuring it out was the first time they tried whacking me. And it really got hot and heavy in 2016, to where there were a few more attempts at that point in time. This last January of 2019, I was in a location and there were three fellows who viewed me. Well, first there was one guy who made eye contact with me. He turned down to the other two and said, "Hey, there's Nine Lives." So that's my current nickname.
This is a name that they had given you.
That's the name they had given me. So what had happened, just there was nobody else around. It was like 2 or 3 in the morning, I believe. What happened, as soon as he told those two other fellows that were sitting down, he was standing up. The guy who said, "Hey, there's Nine Lives." Those other two gentlemen that were sitting down in chairs snapped their heads and made direct eye contact with me. So with body language being, what, 93.4% of communication, it confirmed to me that he definitely was referring to myself. So that's my current nickname with these people, is Nine Lives. Back in 1998, I was told by one of my sponsors, you have to have two sponsors to bless your invitation into the group. One of my sponsors told me back in 1998, which was 2 years after my initial initiation, told me that they had nicknamed me Slippery. So initially, I had gotten away from something. I'm assuming it's the second and third degree and things like that. And what takes place or what's associated with being an active member of the group. So that's when I had found out initially that they had given me the name Slippery. I don't know. They could have been trying to frame me into like some kind of fraud at the time, and maybe I slipped away from that. Either way, it's by design to eliminate competition. That's a large part of what they call their craft of Freemasonry. There's a lot of collusion involved to disallow competition in all sorts of various ways. They rely heavily upon psychiatry to target individuals. They call us TIs. It's really quite the phenomenon.
Sorry, TIs Hello? Being
targeted individuals. It's very similar practice to what's described as fair game in the Church of Scientology with what they do to ex-members. There's only one site I've ever come across that really describes this phenomenon quite accurately. There's three words in it. I don't remember the order. It's gang stalking, mind control cults.com or something like that. That order might be not correct, but those three words are in the website's name. It's called gang stalking cults, mind control.com or mind control gang stalking cults.com. I don't remember if it's still up and running, the site, if they haven't taken it down yet. It really describes quite well the phenomenon that they engage in with regards to what they do to their competition that they take down. Essentially, almost all the sciences are false. Like business science, I'll give you an example. You go to school, whatever, you get a science degree, you go out in the business world, and everybody thinks it's a certain way. And if you save your money your whole life, do good work, you go out, you can start your own company at some point. But by design, then they come in, take you down, and you've spent all this money on getting your business going, and they come in at 10 cents on a dollar and buy all the equipment that they forced your business into collapse that allows them to do all these things. It's really the whole phenomenon, everything all together, was very, very complex, and it's taken me well over 20,000-30,000 hours of studies and a lot of firsthand experience dealing with these people to get a real good understanding of what is actually taking place. Most of what I would discuss is pretty unbelievable. Let me just give you one example of another little story. I told you about my Nine Knives nickname. Another little story was I was out traveling the country, and I came into a Burger King early in the morning where nobody was in there. It was probably like 6 a.m. just as they had opened their doors, and there was a manager and a cash register operator standing behind the counter there. And just as soon as the manager seen me, she stated to her assistant, "That's the American." So this is where I'm at with these people. This is back in 2016. So just as soon as she said, "That's the American," and keep in mind, there's nobody else in the store. It was a Burger King. It might've been a McDonald's. I don't remember. It was quite a while ago, but I'm pretty sure it was a Burger King. Anyways, so the manager lady said to the girl, "That's the American." Just as soon as she stated that, her assistant, again, snaps her head and looks straight at me in the face. It's kind of an involuntary reaction to, I suppose, take a look at this person that obviously they know some kind of system that involves labeling targeted individuals, and there's a hierarchy of threat level that I've found out. So her assistant snaps her head and makes eye contact, looks directly at me. So I know, once again, they're talking about me. So that she said, "That's the American." The immediate look towards me, and then the manager stated to the same girl, "He's the most important one right now." So at that time, I was pretty high profile with them with regards to what I call a threat level. Nobody's really supposed to know about all these things, right?
All right, can I just ask, how far did you get with these people, and why did you become such a threat to them? Because you got so far and then decided to go no further, and they then sort of tie up loose ends.
That's a pretty good summary. I call it like five threat levels with a sixth highest threat level. The five threat levels to them, or categories that they compete with, are power, authority, influence, wealth, and fame. So if you break into one of those circles, I broke into the wealth circle by buying that firm. That's when they do their recruiting. They came after me and lured me to go to what they call a business meeting, but it was really a first rite ritual ceremonial blood oath.
And this is because you'd acquired a certain amount of wealth.
Yeah, I got that farm that was worth $250 million overnight. I broke into the wealth circle. But once you break into one of these circles, the power, authority, influence, wealth, or fame, once you gain entry into one of those categories from a competitive nature, competing with their members, because that's they're supposed to have all this sewn up, right? And you got all these other
monopolies,
Yeah, you got all these other secret societies that play into this whole big mix of things. It's a pretty complex thing, and it deals with the control of the United States military and
media.
On and on and on. Like they talk about the deep state, and they talk about the deep state and the shadow government, but they don't ever bring up secret societies, right? They don't bring up the phrase secret societies, and nobody brings up Freemasonry. So
yeah, I mean, the way I would talk about this is I tend to call it a global satanic criminal syndicate with a lot of Jewish power and Zionist power and influence in all of this. Is that your experience of this? Have you come across a lot of Jews and Zionists involved with it, with this?
Well, what this is my understanding of it. Based again, I got like 20,000 hours in firsthand experiences. Where I'll give you another story where I was sitting down at a poker table. But let me just explain what you're getting at there. That what happens is once you climb to the highest positions in, let's say, whether it's Scottish Rite Freemasonry or York Rite Freemasonry, you get invited into either like the Knights Templars for the York Rite or the Shriners for the Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And then it's my understanding you can go on to be invited into other, they're collusive, in other words, they collude, other secret societies, like you mentioned, like the Khazarian is a phrase that I'm familiar with, Khazarian Zionist Jews. That would be the Rothschild direction, is my understanding. So potentially that's called, it's my understanding, the 33rd degree realm. So that you have to be invited or accepted pretty much by the time you get, if you do stick with it and you get to those higher ranks up to the 32 degree range, in most cases, you're going to either go into
the Knights Templars
direction. Well, you've got satanic ritual abuse. To me, there's something that happens at the third degree level of Freemasonry because people don't talk. So there's something, I think it's extraordinarily highly probable that degree is extraordinarily significant, that that's what it takes for an initiate to actually technically be considered a Freemason. Until you get to the third degree, you're only considered an initiate who's riding the goat. So to me, based upon the first degree being extortion involved, and now you're talking RICO criminal acts because it's done in group form, so it's more of a high crime, just the act of extorting the initiate through threatening to harm them bodily or kill them.
And what happened with your business that you and the wealth that you acquired?
They work on you in all sorts of ways. They call it the craft of Freemasonry, right? And all the lower junior members, they all think they're. I'll give you an example. One junior member might get told, "Well, just take that guy out to dinner. We'll give him, go to a small restaurant. It'll cost you $30-$40. Just take him out to dinner." They give them $100 bill. I'm not saying that this happened. I don't have a specific example, but this is just an example. The stuff they do is just beyond comprehension. So the guy takes you out to dinner, so they know where you're at. They know you're going to be tied up. They know you're going to be busy. Another higher-ranking member might, let's say, hide your keys for your loader that you're going to load a truck with the gravel and make a sale and please a customer, so you got your customer base. So since they hide your keys, though, by the time you get back, you can't find your keys, you don't make the sale, you tick off your customer, you lose your customer base. I'm just trying to give you just throwing out of the blue example. The stuff they've done to me, it's so hard to believe the things that they've done to me.
So ultimately, they destroyed your business and your wealth, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it depends on what, you know, like Kanye West, he came out, right? So what do? They go after him with psychiatry. Probably one of the biggest stars. Now we're in the fame category, okay? So it's power, authority, influence, wealth, or fame. So in the fame category, you have Britney Spears. I am sure she has tried to fight these people beyond most people's comprehension to receive such backlash from these people in the psychiatric realm. And it's my understanding she can't even control her own finances. Her father has been appointed to as like guardianship for her. Janet Jackson spoke out about what they did to Michael. So these people, they all deal with this in various ways at the highest levels. Now I came up through and some things happened in 2016 that brought my threat level up to the sixth category that I talk of, which is in a level all its own, is the way I look at it. So you got the five circles of competition, the primary ones, the power, authority. So if you get into a position of politics, or if you get into, if you show talent at singing or playing guitar and they see you start rising up through, that's when they go after these people
to recruit
them into these fields and industry. Because once you get into, let's say, wealth, you might start a business and now you're competing because you influence a bunch of people. You got 100 people working for you.
Yeah, they don't want anyone towing their agenda, basically.
Right, and if you become famous, like a singer, and you got a small band, and you're starting to draw crowds, the next thing you know, you can get wealthy because you broke into the fame category. It'll lead to wealth, and then all of a sudden, you're going to become influential. You got a million groupies, or you know, whatever. So that's like the five, and then next thing you know, like Ronald Reagan was a movie star. What did he do? He ran for politics. So there's. It relates to where that's what they're really, really sets off the alarm bells to these people is that if you get into one of those circles of power, authority, influence, wealth, or fame, you're either going to get taken down or you're going to get whacked, or pretty much those are the two options. Now, there's a sixth category I've spoken of, and it's called sacred knowledge. Because they say, the famous saying is knowledge is power. So that's where I'm basically so dangerous to them, and why they've tried multiple times to take my life is because I've got way too much sacred knowledge that I've learned and figured this stuff out, and everything they've done to me. It you can either say, okay, he's crazy, and you know, take that line that they try to propagate ideologically into people's psychology, such that that's typically the way it goes, and then they come after you with psychiatry. Or you can say, well, geez, it makes sense of everything to a degree of 100% proficiency, that there is this system that works. It's called the craft of Freemasonry, and they're collusive, essentially, with all other secret societies that collude with them. Now, they all aren't collusive. There was something that happened in 2017, between, in my opinion, between the Knights Templars and the Khazarian Zionist Jews that flip things around. So now we're starting to get into what? Jews versus Gentile stuff. So it's...
Okay. Jerry, is it Jerry's your name, is it?
No, it's Greg.
Greg, sorry. Greg, I've got another caller, right? It's fascinating stuff. Some of it I'm obviously familiar with. Some of it not to the level of experience that you've had personally. But give us your Facebook, and we can talk off air, and I'll get you on.
My name on Facebook is Gregory, that's O-R-Y, G-R-E-G-O-R-Y, L period, Kreiley, K-R-E-I-L-E-Y.
Gregory Kreiley.
Gregory L period for my middle initial.
L period.
Yeah, Kreiley. Kreiley. Gregory.
All right.
It's my middle name is Leonard. Gregory Leonard Kreiley.
All right. But send me another friend request again, because I can't see you here, so I can't see the friend request. So send me it again, or send me a PM, and I'll get you on again. We can discuss it on my other show as well. I've got a show on Revolution Radio. You may have listened.
Well,
to that.
We'll see. We'll see how much longer I'm still alive, because I'm still alive, man, you know?
Pardon me, Paul.
I'm sure.
Paul,
I think if you pray,
I think your other caller here, Paul, might be interested in speaking to this gentleman for a moment, actually.
Okay. If you stay on the line then, Gregory, because I've got another caller here. Graham wants to talk to you. Go ahead, Graham.
Oh, it's Graham. That's who I was talking with.
Graham Sutherland.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one who I had written on Facebook.
I thought that's who I was talking with.
I thought you were him.
No, okay, so it's Graham that you were talking to. I was wondering because I looked through my
I had a little bit of... Yeah, I did the friend request thing, and I had a little bit of back and forth with him, and I actually sent him my conclusion. See, what I kind of had to do on Facebook is I've been writing it all, and then I put fiction question mark to try to cover my butt legally, but it's basically all true. So... But that's what I've been doing is if I've been writing a book. So I've got like tons of writing on Facebook, but I hide them, right? So
that's a good idea.
Well, that's whatever. I've been at this now for what, you know? I started figuring out in 2011 that was the first attempt on my life. And then it motivated me to put in all the hours that I've put in to try to figure out how the hell to stay alive and defend myself against all this crap that they've doled upon me.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very sinister organization.
I'll give them something, right? It's all about world power, domination, control. I've engaged in so many studies now with like economics and psychology and psychiatry. Just I've got, like I say, 20,000-30,000 hours trying to figure all this crap out. So basically what I've concluded to some degree along other realms is all animals like to feel safe and secure in their environment. So I forgive them for everything, right? Because to me, that's all they're trying to do. And they're being focused on and being threatened as far as they're maintaining their standards of living, let's say, which they generally have high standards of living. So they're trying to maintain it all. We're in the midst of what's called the Holocene mass extinction event, where basically the surface of the Earth is in question as far as its longevity to maintain life forms. And...
Pardon me.
They're
Hello.
Just trying to do.
Pardon me. Caller,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Graham here. We only have a couple minutes left. I know Graham wanted to speak to Paul for a moment just to introduce himself. They're both hosts back to back here on Thursdays at revisionmedia.org now. So, hey, Graham.
Hi, Paul. I was speaking to. I got totally sidetracked because, you know, Gregory was basically speaking about everything that I was going to speak about to you.
Well, listen, Graham, we can run on because we're back to back, so I can run on with you into your show if you're happy for 10 minutes.
Oh, of course you can. That's great.
I'm still alive, so I can keep talking.
We can talk with your man as well because it's interesting. Because I actually spend more of my time looking at the Jewish stuff and the Zionist stuff, and I am aware of some of the Freemason stuff. And this gentleman's story is very familiar with the guy I know who used to be in the nationalist movement, who had a business, and they did the same thing to him. They came in. They said, "Listen, we'll put all your televisions and all the big major hotels in the country, in the UK, and beyond if necessary, depending on how we go, as long as you do X, Y, and Z." And they then wanted to control his political career because he was going to be going into the nationalist movement. So, but I'm more familiar with the Jewish angle and the Zionist stuff. So it is interesting for me. So we can run over, you know.
Yeah, well, sure. what those deal with is I refer to the word collusion. So they have been collusive, these groups. They all know that the world, generally speaking, environmentally is in dire straits, to where they're all trying to figure out how to do the best for themselves, maintaining their standards of living, and look out for their children and grandchildren. So if you understand that we're in the middle of what's called the Holocene mass extinction, and another thing I found out was the supply of phosphorus, that's kind of a big one. I seen a show on Discovery Channel a number of years ago, and it talked about peak water, peak oil, and peak phosphorus. That's one of the three primary fertilizing agents that they use to replenish the nutrients in soils. So if there's only 10 or 15 years of that left, now they said it was going to peak in the 1930s, but based upon my studies, if you look at production values of phosphorus, it to me, it looked like it peaked back in the 80s. And based upon the reserves that I was looking at, it looked to me like there's only 10 or 15 years left worth of phosphorus. So it does make sense to get rid of 9 out of 10 of us, because then that changes the numbers of how much phosphorus there is left available for the remaining hominoids. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but listen, Gregory, that's you're into the eugenics campaign now, and the polluted earth and all that kind of stuff. They want to cull the population, get rid of
it. And it makes sense.
Yeah, 9/10 of us. But listen, you can.
I actually agree with a lot of their philosophies.
Listen, a lot of the stuff is global warming thing and everything else.
Prefer the word climate change.
Ice caps and all that kind of stuff. It's all grossly exaggerated. It's a taxation scam. That's basically what it is.
I prefer the word climate change, just so you know. And climate does change. Well, so they are, in my opinion, they're using that to address capabilities to try to engage in their agendas as effectively as possible through manipulating the minds of the people that are being programmed.
Well, of course they are.
In such a way that it favors the outcome of their agendas.
Porn. That's what they're doing. They're selling fear porn. People get addicted to fear. People get addicted. Well, yeah. So they're feeding into it. It's fear porn. But listen, let me speak. Everything that they speak about and emphasize is grossly exaggerated and distorted nonsense. The potash thing, you can get huge amounts of potash from seaweed.
Okay, well, maybe there's alternative forms of that.
Loads of alternative forms.
Are you saying potash is the same thing as phosphorus?
Yes, it's extracted from it.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I was just simply trying to make the point that the dire straits that I view the world as being in from an environmental perspective, it makes sense to get rid of 9 out of 10 of us or dramatically reduce our impact.
It actually doesn't. We've been sold this lie. We've been actually saturated with this lie for the last 40, 50 years. And the overpopulation thing, it's an absolute myth. There is currently enough food in this planet to sustain 4 times its current population. We just need to be a little bit more intelligent with distribution and cultivation and, all these kind of things. It's absolute nonsense.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I just, based upon my studies, and my traveling and first-hand experiences, I know there's a ton of pollution, and I know, like, wood products, timber, gravel. I used to be a materials engineer, so I get that there's limited quantities that is available to be mined and gathered on the surface of the planet, and through those limits, it makes sense. I can see. I try to put myself in their shoes and say, okay, they're trying to look out for their standards of living, and they're trying to look out to maintain that and provide the best for their children and grandchildren. It's just natural animalistic tendency. In addition to that, to feel safe and secure in their environment. All animals like to feel just as safe and secure in their environment, and again, to maintain standards of living and look out for your offspring, to where I can make sense on why they want to get rid of 9 out of 10 or reduce it, you know, what have you.
I can, if you buy their propaganda, and remember, we've been state educated, and we've been sold lies like evolution and fossil fuels and everything. These concepts are all nonsense. And they know they're nonsense. But we've been taught it anyway. Half-baked theories sold to us as facts. And the whole thing about the climate and everything, it's scaremongering. That's all it is. Because the best way to unite people is in fear.
I think there is a certain degree of truth into what they say. I'm not saying that they haven't exaggerated and used it in fear porn and all that,
for example, it's my understanding, I used to do oxygen measuring content. I used to work in confined spaces and things like that, where, for example, the oxygen content is like 18%. It's my understanding it used to be 23%. Now, I can't say for sure on these things because I wasn't there to measure a 23% oxygen content, but it's my understanding that the surface of the planet, environmentally speaking, is fairly taxed. So maybe you are correct in the statement that we just need to start all cooperating better, getting along. That's one of my ideas, is to say, look at it, try to form a union with these people and say, look at, we're willing to do what you guys want to try to turn things around. You know, let's try to make amends here or something, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it means we all have to accept lower standards of living and less free time. If you look at all the time that's spent out of all the planet's inhabitants from the human perspectives, protesting, arguing, fighting, doing all the things that we're doing, all that time, energy, and resources that are used up, and throw war into the mix, you know, to the spoils go the victor. To me, yeah, somebody, it would be nice if they could figure out a way to take all that time, effort, energy, and use of resources into going in a completely different direction than what we've seen since recordation has shown us what happens through the war model.
Pardon me, Gregory. Paul got a late start, so we were waiting a bit later for the transition here. You're welcome to stay on the line, but we were going to have Paul sign off his show, do the intermission, and have Graham start his show officially. Feel free to hang on, but we just have to do that bit of a break.
That's fine with me. Like I say, I'm still alive. They haven't they haven't shown up here to take me away and deal with me with psychiatry, or they haven't, you know, I don't see any snipers around nearby, so I think I can stay on.
Yeah, I don't mind staying on if you don't mind, Graham, for a bit.
No, that's good.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen, on my debut show here on revisionmedia.org. I will be back with you next Thursday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. UK time. That's 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday, the 22nd of August 2019. Thank you very much again for joining me, and I look forward to having you on next week. And take care, and God bless until then.